G'day and welcome to the Mountain Cat Guitars podcast, where we discuss all things guitar related. My name is Doug Meyer, owner of Mountain Cat Guitars, and I've been buying and selling guitars professionally for over 25 years. From boutique guitar and amp builders, vintage guitar dealers and experts, guitar repairmen and luthiers, retailers, manufacturers, and of course guitar players, we talk to the people who buy, sell, play, and of course obsess over the things we love most, guitars. Hi, this is Doug Meyer from Mountain Cat Guitars, and welcome to the Mountain Cat Guitars podcast. I'd like to thank our sponsors, LaBella Strings, the finest handmade strings in the world, and Bob's Used Helicopters. I'd like to give a shout out to Andrew Follett, our buddy on the internet who is a big fan of the podcast. Hello, Andrew. How are you? And today's guest is Shira Goldberg from Retrofret Guitars in Brooklyn, New York.
Hi.
How are you, Shira?
I'm all right. How are you?
Thank you for coming. It's Super Bowl Sunday, so Shira gave up her Super Bowl Sunday morning to be with us today.
Huge football fan. I'd normally be.
Are you really?
No.
No. So you never know. Because musicians are weird. A lot of musicians don't care, and some do. Like, I don't
some
care.
Some do. My dad is a musician, and he loves football, and I never understood it.
Yeah, most musicians I find don't, but then you find people who are rabid about it, and you're like, really? Like,
musicians in sports. Next on this podcast.
Right. That's actually a good one. You know, like, we should find out.
I'm not really prepared to handle that
subject. Me either. We would need some information. We would need some data.
We would need some research.
But that is an interesting thing. I never really thought about it.
But, and ideas.
Because everyone I told we were going to be here today is like, cool, I don't care about football. You know, like.
Yeah, no, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't care about football. Although I might be going to a, like, a Super Bowl party.
Right, well, the Super Bowl parties are fun.
Well, for the sex.
Right. Yeah. There's sex at those?
There's snacks. Oh. Snacks.
this started badly already. I thought you were just joking.
I'm talking about buffalo dip.
Yeah, no, I was going to say chicken wings. I thought you just went to this odd place right off the bat.
What parties do you think I go to?
Yeah, I was
don't
like,
answer
whoa.
That question.
I was like, this is Brooklyn, you know?
No.
Wow, they're pretty progressive out here.
Super Bowl
snacks.
Party with snacks.
Right. Yeah, I was like, wow, Super Bowl parties. I've been going
would
to shitty
call
ones
them
then.
Or hors d'oeuvres or even appetizers.
Right. Snacks. You said it right then. It was me.
Yeah.
That was totally
I'm sticking
me.
With it. Snacks.
Yeah, I just thought you were just like going on a random
how many
tangent.
Times can
like...
I say snacks?
Anyhow. We digress terribly. Okay. So, you work at Retrofit Guitars, we know.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to how you actually came to work there. But you're not from New York City, you're from...
I'm from upstate New York.
Whereabouts?
Originally. I'm from a town called Accord, New York, which is in Ulster County. I was born in Kingston.
Oh, so it's not that far from here.
No, about 2 hours.
Right. And yeah. That's near where you grew up?
Yeah, the Catskills and the Catskill Mountains.
Oh, so it's not upstate like by Syracuse or by Buffalo.
No, no. Although, you know, it's still pretty rural up
right.
there.
Yeah, so. What's such rural? The second you get outside
yeah.
of it, you know.
Yeah, I grew up not in one of the, like there's those towns upstate that
right.
have like a main street. And
right.
That's not really where I was.
That.
I was, my town has a main street, but I didn't live anywhere
oh, so you grew
near
up
it. Like I grew up a couple of farms down from.
That's cool.
There. Not on a farm.
But in that kind of
on
area.
A former right. farm. You
know. That's cool, though.
Yeah. It was interesting. You know, I grew up, and it was kind of before the internet took over everybody's life officially.
Right.
So, you're probably
so
I grew up, like, in the woods.
Right. Me, too. But I'm older than you are, I assume.
But, like...
A lot. You know, but... And we I was considered we were the last people because I didn't get
I
a cell phone until I was an adult.
Officially be the last
right, you might
generation of that.
Right, so we didn't have, I didn't have a cell phone until I was like, you know, probably almost 30.
Yeah,
maybe.
My first
other people
official
had
adult, like I have a phone now, phone was a cell phone. And it was just around the time when everyone started to get them
right.
for real. Like I had some friends in high school who had them, but... It
right.
was not the norm.
Right.
Anyhow, yes, it was rural, and my dad also had like a huge record collection. He still has a huge record collection. So I grew up just like in the woods with a lot of records.
That's what
a
we
lot
did.
Of like instruments.
Yeah, that's what we did. Like for
yeah.
fun, we went in the woods. So and when we got old enough to drink, we'd get beer and go in the woods.
Yeah.
And we knew the woods near our house, and we
sure.
hang out. Like, and then eventually you got cars. But before that, it was always hanging out on a dead end street somewhere. And you know, that was
yeah.
Like,
That's you know, how people grew up.
No sidewalks.
No, like we would just find a dead end tree where you could go listen to music at the back of your car.
Yeah.
You could open the trunk and you could hear the speakers. Did you do that? That was like the best night ever, you know, like hanging out, you know, like doing what you do and like hanging out like on an abandoned street. Like that was the best place.
I mean, I think that also being, I don't know, everyone has a different experience growing up, but I think that my experience being in such a rural place and kind of having that ability to be completely solitary in certain ways really encouraged like my creativity, and because I would just come up with things to entertain myself.
That's kind of true, because people don't have to do that now. Or they have to just pick up a phone and make it.
It would seem that way.
It's
not
as entertaining, but we did the same thing. We started playing guitar like 12 or 13, and that was it.
I didn't start playing guitar until I was like 19.
Yeah, a lot of people start a little later. But we started the second we could get one. You know, like, as soon as we're old enough to get them, we got them. And that was pretty much what we did from then on.
Yeah, that's how you entertained yourself.
Yeah, we'd find somewhere we can go get your. And we would just play Pink Floyd songs or whatever we were into when we were kids. But, like, you know, we'd get
your instrument and play it.
And
that's what I do. Yeah.
In the woods. You know, like, we go to a lake. You know, make a little fire.
I think people
music.
Still have that. No, I hope.
But they're probably on the phone half the time, going, "Oh, let's take a picture."
I hope kids are still getting that. Yeah, maybe there's more documentation.
It sounds like, you know, people in the South or in the middle of the country, you see, like, you know, people seem to still hang out at lakes and things like that. So if you play guitar, you probably bring your guitar.
You're more influenced by outside people, like what you know, FOMO, as they say, like wanting to be where other people are or know what people are doing.
Right.
Stuff like that.
Because music back then, even, there was only one record store in my town.
Yeah,
and there were two kids who played guitar.
Yeah.
So you had
I was actually, okay, so as far as music, I was really, really lucky growing up with my access to music in a time where not all music was accessible the way it is now. Because not only did my dad have a gigantic record collection, like, I'm talking like 70,000 records. Like,
whoa.
He's a very serious record collector. There are rooms dedicated to it in the house. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But also, my parents run a DJ business, so even all the new stuff they get too.
Oh wow!
So there was this huge back catalog, and then everything that was like coming out, they'd be sure to have it because they'd need to have whatever the latest.
Whoa, that's cool.
Pop, anything.
And they would go DJ where? Like parties?
In the Catskill, hotels.
Right.
The hotels were like a big.
But then it was probably all DJs,
big part of my life growing up. The Catskill Hotels were a big part of my life growing up. Yeah, because that's what they, you know, that's what they were doing. My dad always played bass in show bands, and they also ran a DJ business. My parents would
DJ. That's right, DJ Catskills and the whole Borscht Belt thing.
Yeah, the Borscht Belt, for real. That's really where I came up, and, you know, they would play, like, you know, Happy Hour in the Lounge. Right.
Or this by the 70s or 80s.
This was like the 80s. Yeah, the 80s and the 90s.
Right. Yeah, so that was all pop music back then, probably.
Yes, but then they'd also, you know, it would be an older crowd.
I was just going to say, probably older people, so you have to play.
So there was a lot of.
Stuff they could dance to.
You know, you did hear a lot. I did hear a lot of that older stuff growing up in
that
setting
cool.
as well.
That's very cool.
So I had, like, a pretty deep.
I used to go to those hotels.
I got really into jazz at, like, an oddly young age.
Really?
Yeah, like not to be like, oh my god, I'm into it. But like, I just was like, I was super, super into it, like in a weirdly obsessive way, like when I was like 9.
Oh, Jesus.
I actually met Dizzy Gillespie once.
Whoa.
You want to hear that? Should I tell that story? This is the right.
They want to hear that story.
The story of when I met Dizzy Gillespie. So when I was a kid, I was oddly upset. I went through my hard bop phase, right, everybody? Does that when they're 9. And
you're 39.
I mean, because, you know, I was...
That's heavy music for a kid,
I was in the woods. Yeah, but I was in the woods.
In the woods listening to
Bob. I just had shelves full of records and endless amounts of, like, curiosity. So I just got into some very weird music. And so... So I got really into, like, Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie.
Well, that's heavy for a 9-year-old.
Yeah, I know. So, and I also started playing the saxophone. That was the other thing. I started playing the saxophone when I was 9.
Trying to play that music?
That's
heavy for a 9-year-old.
Big dreams. So, my dad had a, he had written some reviews, some music reviews for the, like, concert reviews for the Poughkeepsie Journal. And he managed to get a press pass because Dizzy Gillespie played at the Bar Divan in, like, I was a kid, so like 91 or something. And he went to the Bar Divan. I saw Dizzy Gillespie play, and then he, like, took me back, and I, like, met Dizzy Gillespie. Whoa. I met Dizzy Gillespie. I was 9. And he actually gave me the best piece of advice that I have carried with me to this day. He was like, hey, kid, like, really grizzle, like, hey, kid, play any instruments? And I was like, yeah, I play the saxophone. And he's like, I got one word for you. I was like, what is it? I'm like, hanging on to every word. And he goes, practice. And I was like,
done.
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. And this was like Dizzy Gillespie. He died like only less than a year after that. So this was, yeah, this was like 91, I want to say.
That's heavy.
Yeah. Isn't that heavy?
That's crazy.
And then I, you know, because they assigned, like, I started playing saxophone, and at school they assigned you a certain amount of practice time per day. I think it was like a half an hour.
Right.
And like, after that, I was like, that's not enough.
That's not gonna be good.
I started practicing like an hour at least a day at that point. And yeah, that had a big impact on me.
That's huge. But that is a common thing when you really talk about people who are real that great. The one common thing you always find is that they were just never stop practicing.
Yeah,
ever.
It's true. The people who are really,
Charlie,
really good.
John Coltrane, they say, never stop.
Yeah, like, it's
would take it to the
so
bathroom
true.
With them. Hendrix.
Every good musician that I have ever met, and at this point I've met a lot.
They all practice.
They all practice.
It's not magic. Like,
it's
Hendrix
not
wasn't magic.
Magic.
It's a lot of practice and some magic.
I practice. You know, one of the best guitar players I know works at Retrofret, and that's George Aslander. Hey, George. And he practices. He gets up in the morning and practices, like, I think every day.
I did that for years. Well, I would go to Chelsea, and it opened at 11.
It's very inspiring.
I'd go there at 8.
It's very
inspiring.
Play for
3 hours. And play all day, because in between customers you play.
Yeah, and there's that,
and then go to a gig.
Specific to
and
working
my hand
in a guitar
now.
Store type of playing, which is almost like a mindless wander.
But we would really
never
just
really
play.
Choose.
If customers
come
in, we just ignore them.
I actually find that type of playing in the guitar store, which I do, I mindlessly will just pick things up and start to play them.
Or you
want
to try a guitar? You're like,
right.
Oh, there's no one here. I want
to
try that guitar
to see what it's like, right? And it actually disrupts my practicing patterns a little bit, because it shortens my attention span a little bit, because I'll pick up the guitar and I'll just kind of wander around on it. I'll never truly settle on a song.
Right.
I'll never really get through a song. There's always other stuff going on, and then I'll kind of wander away from it.
It's like people who practice while watching television.
So then I'll go to practice at home, and I'll find myself starting to wander away, and I'll
even
have
the same
to
head, right.
That's something I have to, like, work on, is like focus
that's
on it, stick with it, stick with, because, like, I have so many miles of road of me wandering around a guitar store, just picking up random guitars and playing, you know, two bars and putting it down, and then, like,
everyone has their,
the song,
like,
and
trying a guitar riff.
Everybody
has their thing they do when they try a guitar.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Walter Becker, I could almost play his riff.
I go straight pentatonics. I like to be a little cheesy when I'm trying.
But everybody has a thing that they do that they want to hear if that guitar does something or something. Like Dickie Betts would always do this one thing where he would just go.
Depending on the guitar. That's all. It's actually the only way I listen to any guitar. I just won them.
But, you know, Walter and Bob would sit there and do this thing with the knobs on any electric guitar. They both do. You'll see, but when Bob's here, he'll do it.
Yeah.
But Walter would always do it. Put it in the middle,
telly,
and he'd start to just roll down on things.
Yeah.
And if cool stuff wasn't happening, he'd be like, this is not a good guitar.
Sure, yeah.
You know, because it's all, like, those guys in the 60s didn't have effects.
Well, he knows what he's looking for.
They had these knobs.
He knows what he does more.
Yeah, but those guys know. Like, you know, like Dickie Betts will just go,
I have different things that I do on the guitars. Like, if it's a dreadnought, I'll start...
Right, definitely
playing
electric
some,
guitar,
like,
right.
Country music, whereas...
Whatever, we're just doing
like
it
electric. Yeah, if it's an electric guitar.
Yeah, but tomorrow you're going to play bluegrass, or is it, you know, Gibson?
Yeah, or just like, I don't know. I get a little more electric on electric.
Right.
But yeah, I do.
Everybody has their thing.
I do have a few cliches that I'll pull.
Because if you hang out with somebody long enough, you start hearing their thing. You know, like Danny had a thing, and then we learned Danny's thing.
Oh yeah,
Danny and Chelsea like played the same riff every time he would try a guitar. It was Albert King riff. So we learned Danny's riff. It was some riff he took from Albert King. It was good riff.
Sure,
but he played every single
time. I
just
made my way up a pentatonic scale just to see what that sounds like.
You could play the Danny riff, or someone had it like nailed.
Yeah.
And then the second Danny would pick up a guitar, someone would play the riff to screw up his head.
Yeah.
Like, dude, no, I can't play the riff. You just fucked me
up. Other people were playing the riff at
you. You've been at the fuck with them a lot. Yeah.
Someone could play it perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like Jackson or somebody. Someone could play it exactly the way he played it. And he played it exactly the way Albert King played it. So basically everybody's played that riff.
Sure.
But Danny played it really well. He did really great vibrato. That's all he worked on his entire like teenage years.
Yeah.
He never learned to play a chord, which is the oddest thing.
Huh.
So he could just play Albert King, Otis Rush. Is that right? But he couldn't play a G chord. He couldn't play a chord.
Okay.
But he could play
lead guitar like Albert.
So like, how did that happen?
He thinks of it like a mono.
He just wanted to be Otis
like
Rush.
Like one note at a time.
You know, like.
Was he even playing anything in harmony? Like.
No, he just played.
Guitarmonies?
Just blues riffs that he got from Buddy Kai. You know, he was a blues fanatic. And he could play a mate, like pick up guitar and sound just like any of those guys.
That's. So having come from playing an instrument for so long that is one note at a time, to playing the guitar, it's a very different experience.
Right.
And it feels like maybe he just kind of has that singular one note at a time mindset.
Or he thought B.B. King couldn't play chords, but you could, fine. You just didn't like to. You know, like, because B.B. didn't play chords.
Here's the thing. You know? There's no rules. Just do the thing if you wanna.
Yeah, that was just, we just found that to be the honest thing. So we started teaching him chords. Like, he had to teach, like, he didn't know how to play a G chord.
I'm still trying.
Well, you don't want to be, you know, that, you know, like, but he didn't even, like, we just found it to be the strangest thing. You know, like, how did you learn how to play guitar like that? You never decided to figure out what the chords were. He's like,
He didn't have to. Turns out he never had to.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, you don't think he played a band. Like, you'd be like, dudes, I only play leads.
Needed to do it.
What are you talking about? Yeah. Play the chords. I don't know any chords. I just play lead. So the rest of the time, I just hang out over by the bar. You know, then tell me when I bust a solo. Like,
yeah, there you go.
But he was a singer, too. So, like, he probably just sat.
Right. Well, that's a legitimate thing. That's a lot of coordination.
Yeah, maybe we're just giving him a hard time.
To play the chord,
we
sing the song, and the lead at the same time. Like, dang.
Yeah.
That's a hard one to pull off.
I think we were just giving him shit because we like to give him shit.
But who doesn't?
Right. Especially he was our boss. So you had to bust his balls. You know? But I'm sure you've got, I mean, you were competing.
I'm very respectful of my boss. Possibly watching this morning.
Right. Well, hopefully he will watch. So we'll talk about him in a moment, too. All right. So how did you wind up in New York City?
Okay, so I wanted to be where the action was, and I went to school at SUNY Purchase, which is in Westchester, so only about 40 minutes up from the city.
Yeah, it's not worth talking about.
And I went to the music school at SUNY Purchase, and had a lot of friends and a lot of people. Yeah, I would come to the city, and I already, by the time I graduated, was, like, getting involved in playing in New York.
Down here, right?
Yeah, and I'd play at the old sidewalk scene and the old sidewalk cafe.
Well, it was an older scene than yours, even. I played there when it first opened.
This was, like, the early 2000s, so
right.
Yeah.
I was there way before that.
I was
there in, like, the late 90s.
Oh, dang.
Right when it opened. It just opened.
Okay.
I used to play there.
I wasn't even playing guitar until, like, the year 2000, I want to say, 2001?
Right.
Yeah, something like that.
The sidewalk was great. I mean, so everyone just hung out. I used to play there every New Year's Eve for years and years.
Really? I used to go to the, that open mic.
Latch's thing. Yeah, that was a famous thing.
Yeah, and Latch, and I got my first gig in New York there. I played that open mic.
And he gives you a gig,
and
right?
And he was like, does she get the gig?
He was a great guy.
He was a great guy.
He used to play piano with us.
Champion people.
Yeah, he was so cool.
Which I thought was the best.
Yeah, he loved our band. Like, our singer was really good friends with
him. If you're watching.
Yeah, I haven't seen him in years.
Much love and respect. He's in, like, Edinburgh right now, I think. Or he moved to Scotland.
Did he really?
Yeah, he moved to Scotland.
Oh, shit.
I'm friends with him on Facebook, you know.
I'm not, because I didn't spoke to him, like, much after.
I haven't talked to him in a long time. Maybe I'll reach out.
But we played there so often. He used to sit in and play piano with us.
Sure.
You know, he knew our songs by then. He'd be like, I'll play piano. I was like, cool. What a cool cat. That was a great scene, though.
That was a great scene.
That was like New York East Village when the East Village was the East Village.
Oh, man. I remember the East Village. Oh, R.I.P.
I know. It's so sad.
Yeah, so I used to go to that while I was still at Purchase.
And then at that point, you're like,
and I graduated. A bunch of my friends were moving down to the city. I moved here, and my first apartment was with my friend Ben Kalb, who is a fantastic cellist, and he was actually the original cellist for Spring Awakening. That was all going down at that time. That was like before that was on Broadway.
Right.
And you know, that's how I ended up in New York.
Did you get a job in a guitar shop?
Not that long after, actually. Correct. It was pretty random. So I had a lot of background as a musician in certain ways. Right. I'd been playing guitar for a couple of years at this point. And also I knew a lot about signal flow because my parents ran a DJ business.
Right.
And I had set up remotely for like weddings and stuff like that. I had set up so many like different like little sound systems.
Oh, so you
like
were
that.
Perfectly equipped for it. So
I understood that aspect of it. Actually, that's really the part that I came to First Flight to do. So like
is that right?
I basically just needed a job. I hit the streets. I walked into a bunch of different places. I also had a bunch of retail experience randomly because I had worked back upstate at a costume shop.
Oh, wow.
I worked at a costume shop.
That's interesting. I'm sure there's a whole podcast in there.
Yeah, and that was a whole other experience. We used to like rent out the costumes, like the bunny, the Easter bunny costume, and Santa, and all, like a leopard. This crazy lady used to come in and she...
Oh, sure, the stories,
want to rent the leprechaun costume and like not for St. Patrick's Day, but
I'm sure there's a whole thing.
That's a whole other podcast.
Which I'd really like to know about that.
Yeah, it's a whole other podcast. But
a little kooky.
So yeah, so they needed something.
Oh, so you had it all. You had retail experience.
I had enough
to put it all together.
Pieces of experience.
Just getting your first.
Hello, this is Daniel. Sorry to interrupt. Our main audio cuts out for about 6 minutes, but then it comes back on, so stay tuned and listen to Doug and Cher talking about getting your first job.
Getting your first job, like, especially if that's what you want. Like, when I moved to New York, I wanted to work in a guitar shop. I'd worked at them already, but very briefly when I was young. And when I moved to New York, it was basically 48th Street and a couple other little shops around, but the guys had been working there forever. No one left those jobs ever.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about I didn't know anything about anything. I just was going into different places. I filled out a bunch of different, you know, I was looking for hostessing jobs. Whatever, like just a job. I needed a job. So so I ended up going into First Flight. And I met the manager there. And I said, you know, are you looking to hire somebody? And he was like, actually, we might be. So like, what's your resume? And I gave him my resume. And he was like, oh, you have experience with live sound. We actually are looking for somebody to deal with some of our smaller inventory. They had a whole wall of like COSA, the connectors and adapters.
Oh, that's right. I remember all that.
XLR, you know, converters and things like that.
Wow.
So just, you know.
Right, it's perfect.
That stuff. And like I did under, you know, so, and I also done inventory stuff, like I'd worked that, so I got the job, and then I worked there for a long time.
How long?
I worked there for 8 years.
That's all
I learned everything I know. I'm still learning everything I know.
Yeah.
That's
But you got to start learning someplace, right?
I learned a lot there. I learned a lot
years,
about
and that's a
business.
Real guitar shop in New York City.
And,
you know, it's happening.
Yeah, and Dan Wallach, the owner, taught me.
He's a nice guy.
He is a nice guy.
So and, you're not that long. Oh, at our last guitar shop.
I think he taught me one of the most important things that I have brought with me through this business, which is how to look at a guitar. How to look at anything that you intend, that you're looking to possibly purchase. I think a lot of people will look at an instrument with what they, and they'll see what they want, to see, because that's what they want. They want it to be...
There's a lot of that in our business.
There is a lot of that.
You know, there's a lot, you'll hear, and you could suggest something to somebody, and they, you go, oh, do you hear that? And they go, yeah. You're like, but do you really hear it? Like,
do you really hear it? Do you really see it?
Because hearing is so subjective. So, seeing is something. You could see something. You could see that there's something. But do you hear the difference in these two sets, like, of pickups? It's not subjective, because I don't think people hear the same.
Yeah, and also people will talk up.
Right.
For various reasons.
Well, if someone hands you a guitar and they say it's $100,000, you're expecting it to be amazing.
Sure.
And maybe you hear it as amazing.
But you know, like, I think the thing that he really taught me from the get-go is that when you look at it, you have to take your own experiences and kind of tune out what other people might tell you about it. And then you can take it to people whose opinion you do trust once you, to independently verify. And this is still what I do, right?
Right.
So like, I'll look at something and, you know, it doesn't matter that the listing said that it was from this year, or that it's all original, or that the finish is not oversprayed, or any of that.
Right.
You know, I'll look at it as if I'm seeing it for the first time in like a vacuum. Just like no preconceived. I really try to like clear any preconceived
notions. How many times does somebody burn a guitar and say, oh, this is oversprayed?
Focus on the thing.
And you're like, oh, this is
oversprayed.
You know?
Like, people have said so many.
Right.
At this point, people have tried to convince me of this or that or this or that with their instruments. And it really is, I like to have my own independent, like, I am looking at it. He called it actually guitar forensics, you know. I am looking at it as if I'm trying to recreate that story.
Right.
Of what has
thing,
happened
right.
to this instrument.
Well, we're just doing that with that, right?
Right, that's
right, just sort of
great example.
Right. Well, you were really doing that, you know, so.
Yeah. So,
that's
so
really
I learned.
Because we did it with
there.
This, with Cobra. Yeah, I bought this not that long ago.
Yeah, this is a great guitar.
Yeah, and Cobra's been working on it, but like, it was that thing. It was floating around New York for a second. No one was buying it because it's got to stop breaking.
Sure, it but needs to be the right person.
It needs some love. You know, like, I love guitars like this.
Yeah.
You know, but like a D'Angelico like that.
Yeah.
You know, from 36, that John D'Angelico made it.
Yeah.
You know, like, and everyone was passing on it. You know, Cobra going up, he's like, buy this, I'll restore it for you.
It's
like, done.
Power comes great.
But this has a lot of, like, weird stuff. We can talk about it later. But
sure.
Like, all that kind of strange stuff.
Yeah.
Like, what went on here? Why did it go on?
Right. And
you know,
then,
like,
as
trying to retrace people's, like.
It is something that you know what it's supposed to look like because you've seen it so many times before.
Well, that's the only real thing. It's
that's
like, you have to
that's
see
why the experience will teach you.
Right. That's the only thing. No one wants to work in a guitar shop for 20 years to get that experience. They just want to open a vintage guitar shop.
Right.
You know, like,
but
think of how many blackguards has Peter seen now. So you start to see the patterns.
How many? At this point.
Right. But imagine how many he's seen.
Sure.
You know, so those guys, like Mojo, those guys, you start to see the patterns.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, you know, those guys know at the end of 53 that they stopped doing this to that. Like, little things.
There's specific, like, regarding history.
Down,
right?
You know, like.
There's, like, what you can find.
And you can read
it
in a book.
There's the catalog, right?
Right. But you can read it.
But
like, everyone reads a book. There's no.
Then there's just certain things. Mojo
said that they took apart any guitar that came in back in when they had, like, St. Mark's Music, all those old stores, and they just learned that any guitar that came in, they just took it apart and looked inside of it. You know, like, I never didn't do that much at Chelsea because I was too busy. We were busy. You know, so you'd take it apart to make sure it was right.
I'll take a guitar apart.
But then, like,
I have to see what's under. I gotta see what's in that neck pocket.
Right. That's how you learn.
I need to see that.
Because everyone
claims to see that TD. If you're gonna.
Right.
I want
to
see it.
There's
a
lot
to these
things.
You know?
Right. When you open up a guitar with one of those guys, you know, I used to open them up with G. Smith. You know, like, you'd be like,
yeah.
Oh, look at this thing. If you don't see this, it's bullshit. You know, like, he's like, oh, and this, you know why this is like this, and you'd be like, whoa. You know, like, you can see. He always did it.
Yeah.
You know, but those guys just knew. Like, they saw more stuff. Because stuff was everywhere. You know, we didn't get blackguards every day at Chelsea. You probably get blackguards, you know, at least once a week, 132
weeks.
Yeah,
we try to always have a nice selection.
Yeah,
of
a bunch
now.
Yeah. You know, like, and you guys are juniors like crazy. I bought two
right
juniors
now.
From you
I
recently.
I actually just sold one of them.
So you have some nice ones.
We do. That's the thing.
Well, that's the thing. You guys only have nice ones.
Yeah. Well, I'm not opposed to a player guitar.
Right,
but it's got to
be. But if it's
be,
a player, I bought two player juniors from you guys. They were the two best juniors
be,
ever. You know?
It has to be accurately represented.
And a good guitar.
And a good guitar.
Right.
Like a real player.
Right.
Like but a joy to play player.
Both of those, and they were great.
Yeah.
I just put them side by side. Peter's like, yeah, good, that's a good guitar. You know? Yeah. Cool, I'll take it.
I'm glad you like those.
Awesome. They're
amazing. Yeah, great guitar.
Yeah. I just did a record, and like I just used one of those, throwing everything. Sometimes a junior just is like that. Or even like an Esquire. Some guitars are just like that. Like
it's pretty straightforward.
They just work on everything.
Yeah.
You know, just you can't hit a bad note on them. They just sound great through any amp. They never go out of tune. You know, like everything's happening great. You know, like not
I mean,
all
it's
like
a
that.
Simple, thought out, well built,
right.
Design.
Exactly. Like a junior or an Esquire, or basically the same both. Concept, sort of. You know, like by different
well,
coming
I mean,
from different angles,
through
right,
bridge,
and that bolt on. But you know,
the,
to one pickup
like
guitar,
that makes a big
put a thin finish
physics,
on it, and it'll probably be good. You know, like,
yeah,
like, you know, very vague, but you know, like, you know, the simple things, piece of wood, get a good piece of wood.
And that's what every guitar is. People get very, listen, I buy into the grandiose fantasy of the guitar, and I also understand at the same time that it is a wooden box
with
metal
stuff
strings
on it.
In it.
Right?
That's it. That's what it
well,
is.
Well, you can go either way.
Box.
Some mornings it's not
metal
that. Some mornings it is that. Some days you wake up and you're just like, whoa, you know, guitars are these things. And sometimes you're like, it's just a bunch of stuff. You know,
I
like,
see, I think I've always seen the guitar from the way I first approached it, which is I didn't start playing the guitar because I wanted to be like a guitar hero. I started playing the guitar because I wanted something I could use to write songs.
Right.
Which is still a huge, the main part of my relationship with
right.
the guitar is as a tool. I think it is something that is a means to an end. It's not the thing unto itself. Like the guitar
right.
doesn't write the song. You
right.
write the song. The guitar can help
can
you
create.
On your journey and helps
right.
you with that creation.
That's
it's a vessel
said,
of creation.
Like every
right?
guitar has a song in it.
Yeah.
See, I've noticed like some guitars just pick up and you automatically, you just make it a chord and it's a song. It just starts flowing through you, boom, it's happening. And you keep
yeah.
those guitars around. And some guitars that don't do it, but it could be an electric guitar just plugged into an amp you never plugged it into and it just makes a sound and all
yeah.
of a sudden something starts happening
new,
you're like, where's a pen?
The novel,
this is happening.
It's inspiring.
Right.
Yeah,
some guitars
totally.
Do that, so those are guitars you buy. You know,
yeah.
and that happens in a guitar shop. You know?
I think that that's a big part.
That's what Joe Parrish said about why you keep
like
so many
novel,
guitars around.
Like, yeah.
People like, oh, why do you have so many guitars around? He's like, you could just pick one up and plug it into an amp and hit a chord and it's a song.
They're different. That's how I ended up with like 20 guitars, too.
That's how it happened.
Because,
right.
you know.
It's like, ooh, so many guitars.
Well, you gotta have one for like, to sound sweet, and you gotta
uh-huh.
have one to sound crunchy, and then you need one that's like.
Yeah, it's blue.
It's blue, and it's red.
And I don't have any blue ones, and then you need a
you
lighter
need
blue
one,
and then a black
that's
one.
That's an 8-string bass for some reason.
Right, because you never know. Right, that's what winds up happening.
Know. When you're going to need it.
Yeah, people go like, why do you need so many guitars?
I did
why don't you
write
just have
a
one?
Song on my 8-string bass.
Right,
so.
That's why people started playing in other tunings, or people buy a tenor
yeah,
guitar.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you buy a mandolin.
You need, sometimes with that, you do need a novel.
Something different. You put
something
your fingers
new.
In the same place, but it sounds different.
Right. Because it's really easy to fall into that rut.
You know, like you just Nashville string
yeah, Nashville.
Something. And
I've been thinking about stringing up some of my guitars.
It's really cool because it's
that
thing. You play a G chord, but it sounds completely different. You write a song.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's why, you know, you keep somebody, that's what I discovered when I was young, like I discovered other tunings.
Mm-hmm.
And I started writing, it was
oh,
just
yeah.
so interesting that you would just put your fingers where they usually are, but now it's something totally different. Sometimes you'd hit something.
Drop that D and
boom,
all of a sudden
song.
I'm like,
right, there's a song.
The
but then you're
going to
play these things
the
live and you need 40 guitars because they're all in different
yeah.
tunings and that some have capos.
Yeah.
That's what happened to me. I was playing in a band that was writing all these songs in different tunings. I was playing clubs all the
yeah.
time. So like, they,
that's the problem.
It's like three different tunings. Some had capos on them, so you couldn't do that
be
between
more
songs.
Boring.
I had to start getting rid of them
yeah.
all and putting, like, I gotta learn that song. And
well, that's why these guys will have, like, 15 guitars backstage.
Right. What's happened to Joni Mitchell?
Sure.
Every song
yeah.
is in a different
well,
tuning.
Well, she had the robot
at the end.
Guitar.
Right.
We had to talk about the guitar on this podcast.
I didn't talk about anything.
I give that to her. I
yeah.
give that to
right.
her.
Right, she's so cool she can get away with that, right?
Well, not even she can get away with it. She it was,
she needed
was
it.
Designed, yeah, she needed
well,
it.
Well, she started touring because of that thing.
She needed it.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
I give
15
it to her.
Martins.
I also am somebody who, like, I'm open to the idea of your favorite guitar not being my favorite guitar.
Right.
There's so many, there's a guitar out there for everybody. So, like, I would never tell someone that their guitar is stupid. Like, in like a I would never be like, your guitar's dumb. I hate your guitar. I hate that guitar I wouldn't do it, but I would never say that the guitar that you've picked out for yourself that you love.
That's different. That's like telling someone their significant other is dumb or whatever.
Yeah,
you might think it. You know, but you don't say it.
Sure. I try to be open-minded to the idea that there's a song.
Because some of the best guitar players I know have two or three crappy guitars they've had their whole life, you know, whatever Squires that they change the pickups in.
Yeah.
They're professional guitar players.
Sure.
These guitars work on tour.
Sure.
And they like them. And they make them sound amazing.
Some of the best players. I think that only good players should play bad guitars. they're the only ones who know what to do with it.
But some guys just, you know, they'll just take whatever. It's a good guitar. It stays in tune. I've used it for a million years. But you're like, oh, why don't you change the pickups? Yeah, it's not fun. You know what it is, shitty pickups. Doesn't matter. They make it sound great.
To you, they're shitty, but...
Well, they're not known to be good pickups, but they sound great on them.
Beauty's in the eye.
So, like...
And also, like I said before, you can't grow the same tree twice. You can't... Just because it's not good on one thing doesn't mean it's not good on another thing.
Why don't you get Seymour Duncan's for it or something like that? Like, I'm good.
I've seen bad examples of guitars that are supposed to be good.
For sure.
And I've seen great examples of guitars that are supposed to suck.
That are amazing.
And, like, who am I to say? Right. Who am I to tell you not to love your guitar?
That's a good way to look at it.
So.
But you're also there to go, like, well, if you think it sounds good now, you know, there's certain things wrong with that guitar. Like, you ever have that person who comes in and you're like...
I could make suggestions on how you could even make your guitar even better.
You can make it stay in tune. You know,
I know a guy who can do a thing to possibly make it better.
Or
but
you
like,
make, have it... Or, you know, get a... You know, but, have your frets stressed because your guitar will... Because a lot of people, I know amazing players who don't know a thing about how the guitar works. They just play great.
They just play great.
But they'll bring in their guitar and be like, wow, your frets are all bashed in. You should probably have those dressed. Yeah. And they're like, I didn't... You know, like when we were young, I never heard of refretting a guitar or even dressing the frets. I remember we had dents in our frets and we thought it was good.
Well, I almost feel like some people shouldn't go down that path because that's how you end up in the land of bad repairs. Is people who think they know how to fix their own stuff.
Oh, wait, it happens when people go in there, I do my own setups, and you pick up that guitar.
God bless
it. Obviously.
Moss is laughing back there.
Yeah, because everyone's had that.
Because who has not gotten that?
Oh, I do my own setups, you pick up the guy's guitar and you're like,
yeah.
You shouldn't. You should have someone
I love that phone call when someone's like, I tried to do my own refret, and I think I might have messed it up. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, really?
Refret. Oh, that's terrible. Or because they're bringing the guitar in a bag. Mm. Like, of parts. You're like, I took it apart, but I couldn't get it back together.
Yeah.
Like, really?
I'd rather you don't know anything about your guitar and bring it to a professional.
I don't.
It's like trying to do your own heart surgery. Like, why?
I don't do it to my own guitars. I have a repair guy.
Yeah.
You know, like. I don't fix my own guitars. We do not fix our own guitars. I don't fix my own guitars.
Because we're here to tell you not to fix
your own guitars. We don't do it. Don't do it. Bring it to a trained professional.
Take them to a qualified professional.
Would you fix your own heart? Right.
Yeah.
You fix your own eye.
Yeah.
You're having a problem with your eye. Would you go on the internet and try to fix it? Some people probably do.
Well, it depends. No, but, for the most part, no.
Right. No. But fixing guitars, I mean, if you had someone train you to do it and you had some experience,
maybe. If that was your goal.
Right. But you always get these guys like, I do my own setups. You're like, cool.
If you are in, here's the thing. You need not just desire, but also talent. And that applies across the board to any.
Well, some guys are just good at it.
Well.
Some guys can measure things.
Some people are,
But some people
have
just.
The touch.
I have a friend Bobby who worked with me at Chelsea years ago. He's passed away since, but Bobby Ross, he was a legend in our business. But you just hand him a guitar and he would just hand it back and it just felt amazing. Guitar. And the fellow Craig who works for me right now, my friend Craig who works for me at Mountain Cat, he's the same way.
Yeah.
You know, like he went to one of those schools, but. You don't really learn anything in those schools. He got a job at Chelsea because I was on vacation. Danny hired him.
Sure.
We needed a guy. He had no experience. He just went to that school. He just happened to walk in on the right day. Danny hired him on the spot.
And it worked.
And he's working in a vintage guitar shop. With, and we're just throwing stuff at him and he rose to it.
Yeah. Well, and desire,
he had
but
the
also
talent. You know, he just needed to learn some stuff. We sent him to some guys and people would show him stuff. But like he could... Even then, just make a guitar play good.
And, like, people have asked me, you know, have you ever wanted to, like, why don't you...
Like, why don't you
have
learn?
You ever thought about... They think of it as, like, an upgrade
well,
or something.
I already
like,
meant...
Oh, shouldn't I be wanting to
I
fix
always
guitars?
Meant to. I always meant to
I
be able to learn to do a setup. I was too busy.
I understand
with
physically
people.
What happens
well, I know how to turn a truss rod. I could
and
do
I
it.
I guess if I were, you know, under a gun and they were like, fix... Set up this guitar.
Right.
Everyone you love will die. I'm like, okay, I will
And that can happen, the truss rod, right? That does happen.
And clean up the electronics, but
right. I know how a truss rod works. I could turn this truss rod in and put relief in this neck.
Yeah, you know, like, I never.
I don't want to though.
That's never I was my like,
screw that.
Purpose.
You do it.
Like I ended up in such. So getting back to like how I ended up in this business, right. It's such a circuitous path, and the parts of my brain and personality type that have been engaged are. Like, I love people. I know that sounds really cheesy, but I do. I love people. I love meeting people, talking to them, and there's, and who are the best people in the world, but, like, musicians come in, and they're all, I've met so many interesting people this way. Like, I couldn't even begin to explain my whole, everything. I mean, that's, you know.
It's the way, what we do, everybody. Right. Especially in New York City.
Yeah, especially you know, in New York City.
I worked in a guitar shop in the middle of Manhattan.
If I were somewhere else, I don't know if I would.
Just
like,
less
especially
people.
Especially in New York City.
You know, there's probably the same situation, yeah. But just not as many people. And maybe not as many, they're not moving as quickly.
And
but New York has a lot of characters. Yeah. But so does everywhere else, but just probably less. I'm sure if you had a guitar shop in the middle of nowhere, you'd have your characters
well,
like
I mean,
we have.
Like I said, in Kingston, you got the Leprechaun Lady, you know. There are characters everywhere.
But we just have more of it here. And people are a little more open. Nowadays, it's everywhere, but... Back then, especially, people were more open about being weird.
Also, everybody comes through New York.
Everybody, yeah.
So every band from everywhere, every musician from everywhere comes through New York, and I meet them, and it's wonderful. So there's that aspect of it.
Right.
I really
feel like music, right. You're
going
to get to meet everybody you ever liked, you know?
And
they're still alive, you know?
Secondly, there is a part of my personality, and maybe this comes from the same place that my dad comes from with the records, that is... a collector and an ardent researcher. So like I want to know everything. I want to know everything about it. I want to know what came before it. I want to know why. And I want to know, you know, what was in the pop culture trend at the time that like caused them to even like go there.
Right.
Like I just
well that's part of if you follow the progression of guitars, you're basically following the history of the country.
Yeah, it's true.
Which is really interesting. Like,
if
why the
really
20s guitars are like that.
Far enough back, you follow...
It's the whole history of the country.
Not just
not even
with
the country,
guitars.
Right.
If you go far enough back, you follow the history of the world. You do. You follow the history from the oud showing up in Europe, right? With the Moors, like... That is...
Right, things were moving around, things became mutated, you know,
yeah,
people went
and,
to these tiny islands,
and,
they had their own instruments.
You know, and it just, people influence other people.
Right.
People's cultures
well, everything
influence
comes from
other
somewhere.
People's cultures, everything, yeah, and...
You know, this comes from Europe, like, making a guitar like this comes from Europe.
Sure,
it's obviously some type of gigantic violin, you
right,
know,
it
like,
comes from Europe, but more specifically, like, it comes
right.
from...
A certain part
well,
of Europe.
Spain,
right.
and then before Spain, it kind of came from...
Right.
It kind of came from the middle because it, you know it
right.
these things mutate you know
and people travel
the oud becomes the
right.
lute becomes right. the guitar and the mandolin
right
and you know fretted
but guitar is interesting
because
it really mostly happened
exist
in the last century you know like before the last century like the 1800s there were guitars but they weren't really not that many people really played them yet you know they
well,
were
yeah,
classical
I mean,
guitars
the,
if anything but.
Well, it was a Spanish
right.
instrument.
Yeah,
so
more
it
people
was,
play tenor banjo, probably.
It was a, you know, and the real big stringed instrument that led up to it, obviously, was the lute, right?
Right.
I mean, and, you know.
Really, than a banjo.
Well, the banjo.
Was way bigger.
Banjo is an interesting, I got really into this, actually, like, this particular history. Banjo is interesting. Banjo is derived from an African instrument. So
directly?
It is.
That would make sense, though.
Right. It is, you know, that
came
concept of like skin
point.
Over a rim
right.
Instrument and came to the United States. Banjo
right.
was not something that spread in the same way as guitar in Europe. You find it in like Ireland
yeah, point,
and stuff
right.
like that.
That's true.
But guitar is something that that mutated into itself in Europe. Right, the basic history being, and I think I said this a little bit, but you know the oud ends up in Europe. It kind of mutates into the lute. There you have your first like fretted instrument, and the
right.
frets are like tied
they
around.
Move, right.
They move. They're
moving
movable
frets.
Yeah, and then, and also in simultaneously, you have the Dagomba instruments of Europe that are also like, and we're talking violins, right. Violas, viol da gamba, like right. that kind of stuff. And so you have some concepts that eventually meld together into something like this, right? But they're still separate,
right.
similar right. concepts.
Look, I'm just looking over your shoulder because they're right there, but like
yeah.
those things.
Yeah.
Because stringed instruments are a pretty universal concept. Most cultures have something with strings right. on it. So the direct
things,
origin yeah. of the idea of a stringed instrument, I mean, I guess it must go back to the harp, right? It's got to go back to the harp.
There might have been some before that. I mean, didn't Egyptians have some type of things that they were...
Right, exactly. I mean, the ancient...
Yeah, I think even like Egyptians, they had... Because people always danced, you know, even...
Sure.
They had to have music.
So
you know,
the concept of a stringed instrument is pretty ancient, right? So these different... They come, but it independent. It's also an independent idea that comes up, right?
Right.
Like, the banjo is not really related to the guitar, and yet they're similar in certain. They meld together.
Yeah.
They end up in the same.
They end up in the same
pot.
Place,
it's kind
right.
of like how corned beef is considered Irish, even though it came from like Jewish delis.
I consider it Jewish delis.
But, you know what
but
I mean,
Irish person would
but
probably
it had to, it had
right.
to, it had to end
well,
up
yeah.
it had to end up in the same room
because one person went from here to here
to be,
and said you know what you do with
the
beef
room
you do this and it's really
yeah.
good
yeah, it
so
had
like,
to end up in the same so
it's usually that one
so
person
so a lot of
yeah.
these instruments so like banjo is something that was in Africa it came over
with private
yeah with enslaved populations
right the four string ones
and
they're failing them yeah
in in America right
right
and banjo in America was king, number one. What did Stephen Foster play?
Right, because they were loud.
A banjo.
Because
they were loud because... Yeah, I mean, there was no amplification, right?
That was really the thing.
They were loud.
Most guitar players play banjo.
And they just were what people...
But you could play them in a dance in a field party.
Yeah.
And they were loud enough.
Yeah,
guitars
weren't
loud enough
They
yet.
Weren't.
There was no Dobros yet.
Guitars were... Didn't,
nylon
they
string.
Didn't, yeah, well, yeah. not nylon string. Gut string.
Gut string, right.
Gut.
I know, that
right?
depresses
so,
me.
yeah. So, like...
I was talking to Eric about this, and he said that their factories in the 1800s, where they made strings, had to be where the best sheep were.
Sure, of course.
And I was like, why?
Because the gut. Because you got to get gut.
But I love animals, so I still like to think that it didn't
exist.
Come from an
nylon
animal.
Nylon doesn't exist until the 20th
like,
century.
I was like, so they put them where the best sheep were?
Yeah.
I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Know, like, I like animals, so like, I don't even want to think that comes from an animal,
Amen.
But it does.
Banjo
yeah.
is, I mean, that's a skinhead,
I
you know.
That's depressing, but anyway, I found that so interesting.
That's totally
it was in this certain...
That's a whole other thing. I don't think that it was like...
Because Eric knows exactly his whole family's history. Because we did a podcast with him.
Yeah.
He has pictures of every factory.
Sure.
One of them was destroyed by a mudslide.
That's awesome.
These were in the hills of
yeah.
Italy. You know, like...
Sure.
And he has pictures of all of them. But, and then the thing came up with the sheep. I was like, oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's where the guts come from.
Yeah.
You know, like, but he's like, oh, yeah.
Have you ever played a real gut string?
Yeah. But I don't... You know, it's like one of those things, like real tortoise
shell
picks. I think
it's fine. Some people will get really jazzed about it. They're like, oh my God, nothing will do but a gut string. It's like,
right.
it gets a little slippery.
Well, it's like real tortoise shell picks. They
you know,
do sound different.
They
you
do
know,
sound
they
different.
They sound really good, but it comes from a tortoise. I like tortoises. You know, so.
That's also illegal. Gut string is not illegal.
No.
Tortoise but, shell is illegal.
Right, but you still get it. But, you know, that was one
well,
thing.
I don't
Jimmy
know
Smith
anybody
would
who
go,
gets it.
Neither, but we did. But you know, G. Smith would do that. Every old he would go through the cases when they came in. We'd
sure,
always get
yeah.
tons of stuff, and he would be like, "Oh, you mind if I go through the cases?"
See,
he was always looking for not really anything of value because it wasn't. But he would.
You're looking for
Danny would let him take
the
tortoiseshell picks.
Sure, yeah.
He'd be like, "These sound different," and
yeah.
then you get one, and you're like, "Yeah, they sound different." You know,
yeah.
like. You know, do you have to have one? No, but it does. It's a thing. You know, like.
You know what's funny? I never even. I barely use a pick.
Oh, really?
I'm surrounded by. I can get any pick I want, probably for free. I just. It's just not
you
how
just
I.
It?
I am like. There it is.
I
am
too.
Like this. It's not. I do a combo finger pick, and then I'll get right in there with my.
Yeah,
nail.
I play with like a pick and my finger. But for years,
yeah.
I didn't have a pick. I just had a really long. Thumbnail.
Yeah, that's
you
pretty,
know, like,
you know, I don't do the thumb. I'm like, I'm terrible. I have to, like, take special care of my nails
my
so
like
I don't,
claws.
Like, rip them off.
I studied classical guitar, and my teacher was like, if I had your nails, I would have been famous. He's like, these things
are... I had your nails.
He really used to say that because he used to file them for me. Like, you know, like when before you know how to file them properly.
Like he'd be like,
give me your hand. Well, it's, you know, a classical conservatory. Yeah, you know, sure. So he's like, let me see your hand. He's like, oh, horrible. I need to show you how to do your nails properly.
Yeah.
Because those guys used to carve ping pong balls. But the only things that sound like your nail, they would cut the ping pong ball and put it on their finger. And he was, a performing classical guitar player. But he'd had hand problems because he wore the thing on his hand. So, but he said, man, if I had nails like this, it would have been a whole different story. You
know? Yeah.
Because mine are really hard. I don't know why. I've never had a cavity, whatever that is. I've strung whatever.
Good but, for you, man.
Hey. It's not all good, but I got good nails.
And your hair is so beautiful.
And I have fabulous
and
hair.
And
it's fluffy.
Love. God, you know, but you smell great too, so.
Thank you. We try. It's our podcast thing. We try to make everybody happy.
So but where, what the heck was I talking about?
That really, history of guitars to nails to hair.
Okay, so.
That was an interesting one.
Right, so.
Okay, we're covering a lot of ground.
So the lute ends up being the fad in Europe, right? And it ends up kind of all over. It goes to all the different
music
countries.
Was played
and
on
it
guitars
evolved
in
into these different
1800s, 1700s.
What's that?
Classical guitar was played in Europe in...
I think it was developed... I might sound really dumb. I feel like it was developed in the 18th century as we
kind of
understand it. There certainly are examples by the 19th century of...
Yeah, do they know who made the first class? Like,
they came out of the...
Someone
they came
that,
out of
right.
Spain, out of the caves in Spain.
Right.
Basically. What's that?
Torres.
Torres, thank you.
Boom.
Torres.
Mas, what year
with the information.
That's Mas Hino. Come out here, Mas.
What year was that? What year was
come
that,
join
Mas?
The conversation.
What year was that, Mas?
18.
Yeah, I just want to see how sure we got to retro friend.
It's even later than
who's
I thought.
Here?
Okay. So anyhow. We're not doing a...
We're just not the history
not
of the guitar.
I am not a historian, but we are doing a brief brush up on what I think I know about the guitar. So then that instrument makes its way around Europe. It's a big fad, big in pop music, and it gets adapted into these instruments that we still know and play.
Right.
The mandolin in Italy,
right?
Because they're making violins.
The bowl back. Yeah,
well, the bowl back comes from the lute aspect, right? But the
that comes from
that
bowl.
Style of building kind of comes from a violin tradition, so they're making the mandolin, which is also like tuned like a violin,
right?
And in Spain, it turns into
they have a lot
guitar.
Of other things, right? And they have a lot of
there's a lot of other
Spain. They have those cuatros and all that.
Sure, there are other instruments that are developed that don't catch on in the same way,
right?
But those are probably the two biggest. Instruments and the ukulele technically comes out of Portugal, but it was a Portuguese instrument.
Never knew that.
Yeah, it ended up in Hawaii
I did that
with the
thing,
people
right?
working in the taro patches, Portuguese immigrants in Hawaii working in the taro patches, and that's why it's called like the taro patch. There's a ukulele called the taro patch, but ukulele is a Hawaiian word that means like fingers, like little
fingers.
No, fingers fast like little fleas or something like that. Fingers jumping like fleas.
Interesting.
I might be botching that a little bit. It's that that's the concept of the translation. And it originally was Portuguese, which makes sense. I mean, Portugal's
right
next
to Spain. People were traveling, everyone had boats, people
so
were moving around.
It's probably like just an extension basically of the guitar. It was called actually like whatever the word for like little tiny guitar, guitar on cita or something.
Right. Makes sense.
So anyhow, so that all ends up eventually in the United States. And like the thing about the guitar though, is that unlike the mandolin, it's an instrument that starts being built in other countries in Europe before it comes to the United States. In Vienna, they start making guitars in kind of their own style. You see all these Viennese guitars, they have like the ice cream cone heel.
Right. Very fancy.
Very fancy. Smaller guitars.
Right.
So you have this guitar that is morphed, that is now from something else, from the lute, which is morphed from the oud. And then that itself starts to morph, right? And that's the story of the guitar. It's an instrument that came from something else, that turns into something else, but still retains its original identity as the guitar, because as we know, there are still guitars being made in the same places in Spain.
Right.
For the same types of music
right.
that it was built for initially. It's still a very living tradition in Spain. It's not
right.
the past, it's the present and the future.
There's like little villages that make
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's the present
and the
future.
Everyone in the village makes a guitar.
So you still have
one,
that
right?
solid, you know, Spanish guitar building tradition.
Right.
The Viennese tradition, that
not
morphed.
Not as much, right?
that kind of morphed. And there still is, there's still, in the 20th century, has been a lot of German guitars and guitar building and Hofner and Heuer and all
right.
these places. But, yeah, so this guitar turns into a couple of things and then comes to America.
Yeah.
And,
where we come in. Yeah.
And in America, it's actually one of these German immigrants, guitar building German immigrants who comes here, the Martin
right.
family.
Martin, New York City.
Martin. And he ends up, you know, those first Martin guitars do, they are reminiscent of that
yeah,
Viennese
you can
style.
See that thing, yeah.
You can see it.
Those,
and even
yeah,
now,
1890
the heel
Martin.
On the Martin comes to that little.
Right.
That
you can see they had
point,
that, like, you know, the
and it,
thing back here. The,
and I, yeah, and I think, yeah, and the back of the headstock,
right.
exactly. So there are still aspects of that guitar
yeah, those,
that retain
those
kind
New York
of that
Martins,
identity.
They call them, yeah.
That are, it came from that Viennese guitar tradition. I want to call it, I'm just going to call it that. It covers kind of a larger
right. That's pretty
Austro-German area. But, yeah. So, that comes to America, and then it isn't until the 20th century that you finally end up with the right
things.
Type of bracing
right.
to have the steel
yeah,
string flat-top guitar. And away we go.
And
then
that's where, yeah.
and then there but the thing about guitar in America, it's people coming into a room together where they not would not have otherwise been. Like you have your Italian guitar building tradition, right?
Yeah.
Here we are. And that is still I find always it's reminiscent of a it harkens back to a violin
yeah,
tradition.
You can
right?
see it.
You can see it.
You know, like you can right? see where it came from.
Yeah, the cantilever, the
right.
the F-holes.
Yeah,
the,
this
just
is the third.
The color,
this is
like,
1936.
Just,
a guitar looks
sure.
like this.
Yeah.
You know,
like, so, and, you know, it's in New York that you get these different
was all
populations.
New York. The only thing that wasn't in New York was
Gibson.
Bringing
their own traditions.
Like, what wasn't in New
Gibson's
York?
Gibson's a whole other
right, how did you
bag
wind up in Michigan,
right
but Martin was in New York, Gretsch was in New York,
yeah.
Epiphone was in New York. These guys were in New York.
Yeah, everybody.
Everything started here and went to other places.
A lot of people
Guild, Epiphone,
started in New York.
And then they left as they need a bigger space. You
yeah.
know, like Guild was downtown, so it was Epiphone.
Yeah. Well, I think that Martin was just like, didn't like the city and.
Or he needed space.
Know. Yeah. And
you know, like,
his
you
cousin,
need space. That's,
I think his cousin went out to Pennsylvania and was like, it's beautiful
it's
here.
Awesome.
It's awesome. Like
you get space for nothing. Right. And
yeah.
it looked like home, right.
It's like home. It's like cows and
right.
trees.
But they eventually all left. You know, like even like, you
yeah.
know, Guild was in Little Italy because they were Italian, so they went to Hoboken.
Who can afford New York?
No one after
nobody.
All. Nobody. Like, you know, that everyone leaves. You know, like, you know, Fred Gretsch was in Brooklyn. There
yeah.
was nothing in Brooklyn yet, really, so he had the Fred Gretsch building, which
yeah.
is a pretty cool building. You know, and that's where all that, I think he had a second building at some point. It wasn't just that one. I think there were two.
Yeah.
But now the Gretsch building is condos.
Well, yeah.
Which is cool, because, you know, we used to drive over the Boyle Creek Bridge and be
condos.
Like, right, but at least they called it the Gretsch building.
Yeah, at least they called it the Gretsch building.
Yeah, I was like, oh, we should live in the Gretsch building, you know.
But, I mean, there are still, well, I have to, you know, give it to Carbonetti. He is continuing
totally.
An Italian guitar building tradition
no doubt.
In New York.
No
so.
Doubt. So let's, well, we'll do that in a second. So, and then we got a
so,
bunch of other special guests.
So, but the banjo, okay, now I'll do a really quick wrap up on the banjo. The banjo comes over from Africa. It is number one top dog instrument in America as far as folk and pop music, jazz, early jazz.
Yeah.
Basically, it gets fancier and fancier and fancier and fancier and fancier. With it's very big in vaudeville.
Right.
Right?
It was loud too.
And,
yeah,
and it's very loud. This is
stages,
before
right.
we have
before
amplification.
Before resonator guitar, right?
Right? And I think the moment that kills the banjo and puts the guitar ahead is the stock crash of 1929. right? Great Depression. Banjo is an incredibly fancy instrument. It's covered in plating and abalone inlays and ivory, and it's just, it's really fancy. It's the fanciest thing. It's very expensive. They're very heavy and a lot of metal.
That's true, actually. It's heavy. You know what I mean?
And when you think of a guitar, like it's I said before, it's a wooden box with strings on it. And now the guitar technology has...
It's getting louder. That's what I...
Yeah, it's caught
up. The guitar
up.
Just has to get
the
as loud.
The guitar has caught up just in time
for blues players
it and... to come out ahead. Hey. Because if you are a poor sharecropper in the 30s,
right.
You can't. You're not going to buy. You might have bought a banjo,
right before that. Right.
20. You know, before that.
Right.
But now you buy. Now there are cheap guitars that are loud, and you buy a guitar.
You can play at your party. It was all about playing parties.
People
back
who
then.
Might have otherwise started on a banjo now start on the guitar. And the banjo never recovered.
It got a fifth string, became, and bluegrass came out.
But I mean. I'm talking number one, top dog, everything.
It's, like, it's
banjo
way more
on jazz, banjo in folk, banjo in
Roy
vaudeville.
Smith, all those guys play banjo.
Yeah,
and
everybody
guitar.
Played the banjo. It was in every orchestra. It's in every band, and that's why you see so many banjos that are from like the 20s,
right? In used shops,
and like a fancy. Like, have you seen any fancy banjos? Do you see, I'm sure they must exist, but do you see many fancy banjos from the 30s?
No, well, nothing gets fancy after that.
Sure, yeah.
For a while, everything's cool.
Right.
Because all the, even, you know, National Steels weren't steel for a while. You know, Gibson didn't have, you know, metal for truss rods.
Yeah, I mean.
You know, like, everything changes in those
economics,
years.
Obviously,
the 40s, you know, World War II
driver
starts.
Of that.
Right,
so.
First it's the Depression, and then it's World War II. That's why I said,
so,
you can,
yeah,
really,
Great Depression,
you can go through the whole history of the country by the guitars.
Yeah, exactly.
Starting at a certain point. But it really, how the immigrants came here, landed in New York City, headed out the rest of the country. It's the whole history of the country and manufacturing.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, like, that's what I always saw it as. You know, it's like, if you follow the history of anything that's manufactured. Now, I'm sure other people say that about their businesses, too. I'm sure it's the same with a sewing machine or something. But,
and you can see also with guitars, as time goes on, you know, then the development of the electric guitar.
But look at the 60s. Those guitars look like the
60s. Right, the explosion
the guitar,
of guitar production,
you know,
the
Art Deco
in the
guitars in the 40s and these guitars,
and then,
you know, like...
Then a more mass market approach overseas building in,
70s,
in the
70s. Yeah.
And this is not just the story of the guitar. This is
the
story of
the whole world.
America,
and
manufacturing in America, of how...
That's why I always look
things
at it. Like,
have always been
if you study these, you'll study the whole history of the country.
Yeah, because...
Starting
the thing
at a certain
is,
point.
The thing is... The cheapest guitar that you could get in 1950 would have been made in, like, Chicago, right?
Yeah, in Harmony or one of those.
Yeah,
sold,
and it would have been...
Could be sold through a catalog.
It would have been, like, 1960, right? You would have gotten your Stella flat top...
Probably a mail order joint.
Mail order guitar,
most
right?
Unless you lived in a city...
Right, exactly.
You had to... maybe go to a five and dime, maybe they would have a guitar, a way to get you one.
The
you
thing
know?
About that guitar is, even though at the time it is the cheapest, like, bottom of the barrel guitar you could get, still made in America.
And they were made well.
Well,
but that guitar, you know, it's
not,
like
not,
a,
not as well as this one.
No,
but
they
it
were,
is made in America.
But you could buy an old K like that. That was
yeah,
probably
exactly.
like a $3 guitar back then.
Sure.
They sound better than most guitars now. Like, just didn't make crappy stuff back then. You know, like,
yeah, I
they
mean,
must have, but.
I would challenge you to. I'm sure I could find a guitar that sounds better than that K. But that being said, a cheap guitar now would never be made in America. It would not be made in America.
It can't be. Right.
Every guitar that is made in America now is like, that's the high end.
Right.
Right.
Generally,
that,
you know, like,
just that alone.
That's why everyone
makes
goes to China now and makes these things. You know. Like,
yeah. I mean, production is all
it is
over
what it
the
is.
World,
people
but,
are always going to go where it's cheap. But
yeah.
you know, like all those Korean-made Epiphone guitars. Those were great guitars.
Those are cool guitars.
They're cheap. You
I
know,
like the Korean Danos, actually.
They're great.
Yeah, they're
cool. You know, that was great guitar building.
And I'm not saying that there are not cool... Listen, I love a cheap thrill guitar.
Right.
To this day, I love a cheap thrill guitar. You know, and like... I love... Okay, this is a fun, like, question or thought for someone who has sold many guitars. Don't you love the idea of having sold someone their first guitar?
I saw a lot of people...
I love that. I love that. I think about that. I think about that sometimes.
I think about the guy who sold me mine.
Yeah. Who whose mind got completely developed by that guitar?
Who, I know people who are famous
who
now who
got in touch with
would hang out at Chelsea as little kids, and we gave them their first guitar for free.
Yeah, I love that story. And you know what? Like, so getting back to how I came up, first flight. So like that's where I started, and that was totally the vibe of our business. We were definitely a mom and pop shop. Big wall of accessories, lots of accessories.
Yeah, I remember that.
Lots
going
of things. Yeah, fully stocked Hosa wall, fully stocked wall of strings, fully stocked, you know, all parts, like all of it. Just like little things, all the different picks. And definitely that place you go and get like your first guitar.
Yeah, it was like that.
You know,
yeah, you wouldn't go to Rudy's and buy your first guitar.
Right, but it was that,
well, you could,
it was that type of place, right?
But that was like a real...
The thing about that is that we'd have a lot of that kind of stuff. I mean, we'd also have like a few genuinely really cool pieces,
right.
Unexpected pieces.
Well, I used to walk by the window and
right.
look up, you know, the,
yeah.
the, you know, and be like,
so we'd have,
oh, cool,
you know,
Dan Armstrong. You know?
On one hand, we'd have your Squire, right? And on the other hand, we'd have like, I don't know, a Mabel Capitelli, right? That's fun. Like, we'd have these different kind of levels of guitar there. So I really learned from the bottom.
Right.
To the top.
Yeah, that's a great shop for that. You know,
yeah,
like,
it was a really good shop to get that type of education.
Right.
Because I learned...
Because if you just work at a high-end shop, all you're going to see is high-end guitars.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Because I learned to be open-minded about lower-end guitars. I also learned to, like, love any guitar, kind of. I could see the value in why people would love certain guitars. So
it's funny, now people have caught on to the cheap guitars. Because now everyone buys the old cheaper vintage guitars. Which years ago you can get
I feel
a Gibson
like I'm almost
for
like partly
responsible for that.
Responsible
like,
for
that's
that.
Like Mojo now. That's
Harmony's
like what guys have
crazy.
A fetish for now. It's like cool old cheap guitars.
I love
anyone can buy a cool old expensive guitar.
I love cheap thrill. I love cheap thrill
you know,
guitar.
Like
a Harmony, a Hagstrom, a Vox, like sure, yeah. I have
some
of
those are really cool. That's why I have one that's a gold foil.
I have like a problem actually.
Well, you can buy lots of those.
I have bought lots of them.
Right.
Like I
that's
have
why they're
like
fun.
I have like three too many H49s.
Right.
Yeah, like a Hagstrom bass over there. Exactly.
Boom. Exactly. That thing.
Exactly.
You could play in a band with that thing. Guys in the 60s did. Look at every band, people had that bass.
Sure, yeah.
It was in Europe. You know, those guys.
So I do. I love
things.
A cheap throw.
Right, but those things sound great. Plug it into an old amp and it has
and I,
sound
I
every record you listen to.
That. I developed that sensibility.
Right.
Yeah,
Danny was into that at Chelsea, like weird stuff that no one was hip to yet. Like,
yeah.
Like panoramic amps, you know, like this pitch of my brows. No one was hip to those. Danny was hip to those early on before anyone. He was into Lonnie Mack and all that stuff, and those guys used all those things. But we would have them at Chelsea for years. No one ever looked at them. And then within the course of 6 months, they all sold. Neil Young bought one. Pete Townsend bought two of them.
Yeah.
Because Robert Cray started using them again.
Yeah, these trends develop. We actually...
And that's what happens.
I have... I don't want to be too name-trappy, but I do have like a funny
you can be
name-trappy.
Just the internet.
Okay, so it's just the internet.
And many, many other places.
This is a very old story. This is not somebody recently...
No one looks at the internet anyway, so it's not the big deal.
So, I have a yen for, and First Flight in general kind of had a yen for the Setnik, Gaiatone, like late 50s Japanese guitars.
Yeah, he liked those too. He was hip
those
to those
cool.
before anybody. Yeah,
those, well, I have a couple of those in my own personal.
Yeah, I would, like, I didn't
collection.
Care about those, but Danny was hip to those, like, but before everybody else was. He was buying them.
So, we had those. We had, you know, the L, mostly like Gaiatone, like the LG series, a couple of different types of those. And John Bryan is really into those guitars. He's a big producer. And he's like, he's done a lot of amazing, amazing work. He's worked with like Fiona Apple and some of my favorite records. He made that great Sean Lennon record a couple of years ago. Anyhow, so he loves those guitars and uses them publicly a lot. And
publicly.
Like publicly, you'll see him using one of those guitars a lot.
And
they kind of caught
it,
on as a little
That's
trend.
What happens,
and then this
right?
one time he ended, I don't know if Moss was there for this, but because I used to work with Moss at First Flight.
It's so funny how these things come around.
He ended up at the shop at First Flight. And
come join us, Moss.
Yeah, come on come over, Moss.
We should have people stop.
Moss is part of
we have a bunch
story.
Of people in there who are going to join us shortly. Yeah. So I just wanted to. We've got a lot of ground to cover with you, so I don't think this is going to be our last podcast.
We had one, and the prices on these were creeping up, and he asked Dan, the owner, you know, why is this guitar so expensive? Like, I used to get these for so cheap. Yeah, and that is exactly what he said. Yeah. He was like, it's your fault.
Right. It happened to me with the bass player in the Black
Rose.
Guitar. Used one of those Les Paul recording basses in a video.
Yeah.
And he came in the store and he's like, do you have any recording basses? I'm like, no, because of you.
Yeah.
He's like, I know, I can't get anymore. He's like, I didn't realize that was going to happen.
They get indignant, like, how dare this be more expensive? And it's like,
but I love that band, so I knew he played it, but people were starting to ask for them. Like, the Black Rose did the same thing with the Fender 12-string guitar. No one cared about that Fender Electric 12.
And then,
all of a sudden, one guy starts using it in a video. Back then, it was like a video. And someone they didn't even have to use it on the record.
Yeah,
people would see it in the video, and you know, it was like Vintage Guitar Magazine was like that because there was nothing else. Like when the one guy wrote the article, it was a joke. Someone said the Purple Marshall sounded better, and someone would come into the store and be like, "Do you have any Purple Marshalls?" And be like, "Dude, that was a joke. It's just Tolex. It doesn't have a sound."
Yeah, but
stuff like that. Now there's an internet, so all kinds of shit could happen like that. But people get these things where these things sound better. But the guy said Purple Marshall sounded better because he had a bunch of them, and he was
it
was tongue in cheek. Wait, secretly they sound so much better. But
they're louder.
It's the purple dye gets into the speaker and makes it purple.
The purple actually changes.
It changes
the
Ohm's
weight
law
of the paper
completely. Right.
Right. It changes the
but
it
probably does
is
right.
It changes the weight of the paper, so it shakes at like a different frequency.
Right. And Jeff
Purple
Beck knew
Marshalls.
That, right? Everybody, Purple Marshalls. But some guy said it like
pigment will sound different.
Yeah, every pigment sounds.
But everything sounds different.
Yeah, everything.
Like PAFs. Yeah, they're different. They were made in 1959.
It needs to be played. I think
that too.
Right.
Like,
that's why it's
the question. Like, does a 50s guitar sound amazing in the 50s? Listen to Buddy Holly playing a 50s Strat. It's the 50s. That was a new guitar. Sounds fucking awesome. It's playing it through a Fender amp.
That's why if you get one of those like emerald green guilds, they sound better than the red ones.
Why?
Because the green.
Because the green, right? I thought you were going to tell me like something I didn't know. Of course they sound better, right?
Because of that green.
Right, because they're green.
It's that green pigment.
Right.
That's it.
See?
It's more natural, I think.
Right. Well, it's right because it comes from a tree.
More of a vibe.
Right. Then like Candy Apple Red doesn't come from a tree.
It's closer to the earth.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing. But that's why I think PAF sound different. Like, you have this conversation every time you talk about guitars, but like, why do PAF sound different? They certainly do. There's no doubt that they sound different.
Well, there are actual reasons for that, but...
Right. But you can take one apart.
It's because of the pigment.
Right. It's because of some magical thing. But it also was made a long time ago. So, well, everybody's here. Everyone's here, right? So do you want to open it up to other folks?
Sure. So, wait.
Wait, we're in the middle of something.
Well, I haven't gotten to working it first.
I know, I was just thinking
that. So I had a bunch of experience in that, and then basically I got a phone call one day from Retro Fred, and they were like, come work for us.
Really? They recruited you?
Yeah.
Out of another guitar shop?
That is what happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's unusual, I think.
It was out of the blue.
Yeah.
Maybe Dan put a good word.
Somebody put
someone
in a, somebody must have put in a good word.
Yeah.
Although I had met various people at the shop, including like Peter, and I had some pretty in-depth conversations with Peter about like Archtop, you know, like the cave-in on a mandolin.
Right.
Like I had some pretty in-depth.
But you didn't go to Retro Fred and fill out a
nitty gritty, nitpicky. I can't talk.
But they approached you, obviously. You know, like approached you for, because it's usually the other way around, really. You know, like
I literally just got a phone call.
That's
one
pretty awesome.
And they were like, come work for us. And it was actually right before Christmas. It was like October, which in retail means right before Christmas. And after all that time, I knew that if I had like bailed, just walked out on first flight, it would have been unkind. It would have been like really, you know, because I was like, It would have been right before Christmas.
Oh, you kept it.
And I basically would have been like, well, that's your problem.
Especially someone you liked, the guy who worked there for so long. Because I went from 30th Street, from Chelsea Guitars to 30th Street.
Yeah.
It was seven blocks away. But you had to do it the right way.
Like, initially, they were like, come work for us. And I was like, well, I can, but you have to give me enough time to, like, wrap up this season.
Right.
This is a big part of this business. And
that's
I don't
the way it's
leave
done.
Them,
right.
You know, so so I did not come to work full time at Retrofret immediately.
Totally, yeah, right.
But
that's a hard move too. You have to tell Dan that, right?
2 months. I gave him like 2 months.
Yeah, I gave him
notice.
Months. You know, like. And I said I wouldn't leave until they were comfortable with it. You know,
and like
I had to give
Rudy it was nothing.
2 years
notice.
Yeah.
What?
He's
I have
still,
your job.
He's
I'll start
still
it soon.
On notice. He's
yeah,
like,
you're still working there. Still working. Really?
He gets a paycheck every week.
Also, because I had to move to Japan.
Oh.
And Rudy goes, you know, you have to give 2 years
notice.
Because I have so much stuff.
Right.
Done.
Like, oh, that's fair.
Well, the customer's going to be like mad.
Hey, Bob. You want to join us?
Yeah.
Night, Bob.
All right.
Hey, this is Daniel, and that's the end of episode 3 of season 2 of the Mountain Cat Guitars podcast. We didn't have a formal end to this one because some friends walked in, and that will be episode 4 next week with Night Bob, Josh from Protocaster, Shira Goldberg sticks around, Masino pops in, and of course, Doug Meyer of Mountain Cat Guitars. See you next week.